Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
She felt their eyes. All those executioners. Welcome, young lady, said Mickey Wright, the premier announcer for Chain Gang All-Stars, the crown jewel in the Criminal Action Penal Entertainment Program. Why don't you tell us your name? His high boots were planted in the turf of the battleground, which was long and green, stroked with cocaine-white hash marks, like a divergent football field. It was Super Bowl weekend, a fact that Wright was contractually obligated to mention between every match that evening.
That's Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya reading from his debut novel, Chain Gang All-Stars. You may remember Nana. He joined us in our first season to talk about his New York Times best-selling short story collection, Friday Black. It explored the violence, injustice, and painful absurdities that African-American men, women, and children have to deal with every day. Now, with Chain Gang All-Stars, Nana has taken his fiction to a whole new level. As Ron Charles said in his rave review for the Washington Post, quote, "It's a devastating indictment of our penal system and our attendant enthusiasm for violence," unquote. The story focuses on two women gladiators who are literally fighting to the death to obtain their freedom. Nana joins us now to talk about Chain Gang All-Stars and how his father's job as a defense attorney inspired it.
I think he was the seed for the novel in many ways. Yeah, he was a defense attorney, and I remember at a very young age him telling me that he was defending someone who had killed someone. And as a child, I remember feeling like, well, okay, I guess my dad's a villain. Kind of communicating to him, like, or just questioning, like, why would you be doing that? And I remember I was very young at the time, but the long story short of it was he told me it's not that simple. And I think having someone like that tell me that at such an early age certainly influenced me in ways that maybe I wasn't aware of at the time, and maybe I'm still not aware of. But from there, just having him as a presence in my life made me understand that the law and the rule of law, something that people are shaping, and it's malleable and it's controllable. And there is like a right and wrong, and that should be your guiding hand. But what we do once we establish that right or wrong is very flexible. So my first book came out in 2018. He passed just a couple of months after that book came out. He had cancer. I think spending time with him and towards the end of his life also influenced the book in a lot of ways as well.
Mm. What was it like for you to go from writing short stories to writing your debut novel?
The way I describe it is you're swimming for a long time with no shore in sight. Mm. And that's, for a writer like me, that's pretty challenging. I really enjoy the process of revision. I like to get an ending and then work on a story for a long time, but at least having the whole shape of the thing in mind. But with the novel, I was probably 3-4 years in. I didn't know if I was half done or a quarter done or 3/4 done. And that is really challenging. So it's a trust fall and a faith practice, but a really long one.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that you originally envisioned Chain Gang All-Stars as a short story for Friday Black. What made you change your mind? Just what you were talking about, just the amount of work and effort that went into writing the novel?
Well, what changed my mind is I started to actually learn about the prison system. Mm. And it's just a behemoth. It intersects with so many other issues. And it just was really difficult for me to truly feel like I was sinking my teeth in a couple, even 20 or 30 pages. Also, I had this character, Loretta Thurwer, who I was really interested by. And in the short story form, we were only going to get a really relatively short glimpse of her. And here in the novel, even though we only spent a couple of weeks with her, I feel like I know her so well. I think that was also a big driver in me trying to pursue a novel, because I wanted to get to really understand her story.
Mm, yeah. When you started writing Chain Gang All-Stars, you hoped that you believed in abolition. What did you discover after you finished writing?
After I finished, and even probably, you know, a couple of years before I finished, I discovered I absolutely was abolitionist. And there are sufferings, I think, that we institutionally administer. What I mean by that is I think our attitude towards the incarcerated signals a general unwillingness to be compassionate towards those who need help.
Yeah, and that kind of ties in with something else you've said. You've described prison as a radicalization space. Can you explain that?
Prison is a radicalization space in the sense that people often go in for prison for whatever offense they might have gone in, and they come out, again, even the label criminal is reductive, but more hardcore in terms of they make sort of bonds with people who have career criminals or whatever you want to call it, but also their ability to move through the world is more difficult, because if they say they do get out of prison, we have this label attached to them now. And so for them to make a living, it's very often the fact that they have to resort to so-called crime to survive. And so inherently, sort of by the status that we assign to those who have been incarcerated, prison becomes a radicalization space, but also because of the nature of the community in prison, it also can become a radicalizing space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. Do you have any ideas about how we could potentially change the prison industrial complex?
I have a lot of ideas, but the fundamental attitude is remove retribution as like a impetus and move towards compassion. And how does that look more materially or practically? A lot of people think about abolition, they think about removing things just as much, but actually more, it's about the addition of services and programs. Most people who are incarcerated suffer from substance abuse or poverty or mental health issues, or usually a combination of those things. If as a society we were much more compassionate to those in that type of need, that is abolition. Growing our capacity to care for those who are suffering from mental health crises, growing our compassion and willingness to embrace the impoverished, that's a form of abolition. Caring about those who are afflicted with the disease of substance abuse, that's a form of abolition. So it's really about doing those things, in my view, and also investing in communities. Prisons are very expensive, low efficacy institution. And I think moving towards a compassion model would do a lot to get us moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. The two main characters in Chain Gang All-Stars are Loretta Thurwar and Hurricane Stack Stacker. Can you tell us a bit about them?
Yeah, so they're kind of the central points of the novel. Loretta Thurwar is the current, they call her the Grand Colossal, meaning she's the Link who's survived in this deathmatch blood sport space for the longest. She is sort of the middle C through which the rest of the book is tuned. That is to say, she's sort of the main support beam. And I think the narrative is really tracking her more closely than anyone else. And then Hurricane Stacks is also on her chain, which is the name for like the teams. And she's sort of her counterpart, her friend, confidant, but they're also partners, as in like they're together. And Stacks is really the moral heart of the book. She is very talented at administering death, at killing, but she also is extremely compassionate. She truly believes in her heart that humans fundamentally are good. And because of that, she strives to make the spaces around her reflect that.
Yeah. How did you go about developing the Chain Gang All-Star series, which airs on the Criminal Action Penal Entertainment Network?
Painstakingly. So, you know, there's like a sort of like general structure things. And I mean, I did a lot of research. I ended up thinking it's complicated because I was reading legal documents. There's a great essay called What is the NBA? And it's not actually very obvious legally what the NBA is, like the organization, because it's several different companies that work together in this amorphous kind of way. And so I had to think about how prisons would take that kind of structure and each of them representing a different corporation, but they're in this sort of league together, which how do I define that? But then I had to think about the human component of how the different people who participate existed among each other and the sort of dynamics of the consumer sport. And then I had to think about the actual games themselves, I mean the matches and the death matches. And then also, of course, the more human component, which is like the real world analogous show called Link Life. So there was a ton of things to consider. And it's really just about fine tuning it over several years. It took me like 7 years to write the book. So I had a lot of time, and it took a lot of time.
You're a big fan of video games. How did your love of video games influence Chain Gang All-Stars, or did it?
It did, and there's some specific ways. I actually wrote about this for the UK edition of the book. And I'm actually there's a game called Metroid Prime where it's sort of like a first-person shooter, but it's really an exploration game. It's really about looking. How do you look at things? And you play this space bounty hunter, a woman named Samus Aran, and she can, like, scan. There's like a scan button when you're in a certain one of her visors. You switch the way the heads-up display looks, and she's in the scan mode. And several of the items are items of interest, and you can press a button, and you kind of like see like a little load bar beneath the screen, and then you get information about it. This scan mechanic is a very, very important and fundamental mechanic in the game, and it shapes the way you move through the world. You have to get some information. You scan the thing. You want to learn what kind of enemy that is. You scan the thing. You want to unlock a door. You scan it. So when I was writing this book, I decided maybe, again, to create add the complexity as if it wasn't complex enough, I wanted these footnotes. And the closest reference I have for the way my footnotes work in this book were the scan feature in Metroid Prime. And even just the gamification of the sport, being a gamer, I think helps with that in terms of, I just talked about the from rookie to harsh reaper. Like, I play many role-playing games where as you gain levels, you have certain different titles. So that also, I'm sure, influenced my mind in some ways.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the footnotes, which are a very intriguing part of the book as well. But I imagine for you, the trick with that is where to place them, because you're taking the reader away from your narrative. What was that tough to do?
And in a lot of ways, this book was me just trying to do like the hardest stuff possible. And because even for myself, I can't say I love the idea of footnotes in fiction. It breaks the narrative dream, which I really try hard to preserve. Mm-hmm. I also want the challenge of reimagining how a novel could work. And I wanted my footnotes to be dynamic. That is to say, I think we're traditionally trained to think of footnotes as accessory information or additional information about whatever they are citing. And my footnotes are kind of like that, but they're not always like that. They have different modes of existence. And so when your eye breaks from the line to go down to the footnote part, you won't necessarily know what you're going to get. And I really like that feeling.
Yeah, you're exactly right. They're surprising because you mix them up and have different takes, and the footnotes aren't all one and the same. So that was another great feature about the book. You yourself are squeamish about violence, which makes me wonder how you approached writing the many violent scenes that are in Chain Gang All-Stars.
It's a great question, and I am pretty squeamish about intense or gratuitous violence. For me, when I'm really in a fight scene, there's a couple of big set pieces that are violent in this book. I'm so interested in the moment-to-moment choreography. It ends up being, you get really mechanical about it, especially in initial drafting spaces. I view it more like mechanical choreography than like mega, mega bloody violence, because I'm just trying to render it as clearly as possible. Of course, when I step back and look at it, I'm like, oh my God, like that's pretty tough. But for me, it's more about like the choreography, like, okay, she swings her arm across her chest with her right arm. That means that the other character has to duck. And what does it mean to duck? That means to bend their knees and lower and hinge at the hips and sway their torso to the left against the right swing and then rise. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. It's like, when you're writing it and thinking about it, those like almost like those component parts. Sometimes like if you're building a car, you don't even see the car exactly. Right now I'm in the engine, and I know it's a pretty crazy engine, but I can't see how fast it goes on the road, because right now I'm working on the pistons. And eventually you finish, and then you finish the car, and you're like, oh my God, I made that car. But as you were working on it, you were really thinking about it piece by piece. And so that's really why I don't think I have an issue dealing with the speed of the car, so to speak, because even though I made a pretty fast car, and to continue this overly extended metaphor, and I know it's a fast car, I was working on them as a mechanic to get it to be fast, and it's not the same as experiencing the speed, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense. You reminded me just in when you were describing this, what you call mechanical choreography, it reminded me of a conversation I had with Sean Cosby a while ago, asking him about how he kind of choreographs his fight scenes in his fiction. And he said that, yeah, that you want to usually limit it to two characters if possible, because if you start involving more than two characters, it's hard to keep track of.
It's smart. And that's why, of course, I have a fight scene with four people in this book. But it's really tough because, again, and I mean, I don't know how in the weeds I should get with this, but I like thinking about this stuff a lot. When you're writing a text, like prose text, it's linear. It's word after word after word, right? Which is very different from us watching a fight scene on the screen, which is why fight scenes are sort of difficult. And so there's only, it's like we're really banking on the reader's ability to retain what just happened, but also create what they're reading right now. And so every time you add a whole other person, it's like asking someone to juggle four things in a right now, as opposed to four knives instead of just two like balls.
Yeah.
And that's tough. It's not by accident that the scene that I'm citing is much later in the book, because by then hopefully I've trained the reader to understand my pacing and how I do those kind of things. But it is very tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you pulled it off very well. Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Chain Gang All-Stars. I can't wait to read your next book.
Thank you so much.
Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya is the author of Chain Gang All-Stars. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya, Ryan Castellez, and Claire Dieterer.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
You know, it's kind of like social media, but it's better.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I'm a coffee drinker. If I was on that jury, I wouldn't give you a nickel.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
I don't want free coffee. It's not hard to get coffee. I can get my own damn coffee.
And thanks to you, our alphas, more Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I've been drinking cafe lattes since the fifth grade, and I haven't looked back.